you like.
That was from the soundtrack of the 1993 movie version of Dracula. And the reason we played that is because during this half hour, as we continue our visit with guest Whitley Strieber on the line from Southern California, yes, we will be talking about vampires. And what is more fitting than to talk about vampires as we are joined by special correspondent Barry Odoza, who wrote a book about vampires, didn't you? It was published in your native land, Turkey. Anyway, Farah, welcome to the show. Later on, executive producer Larry Dickin will be joining us. But right now, let's get back to Whitley. Whitley, thanks for hanging on. And I believe Farah wants to talk to you about abductions.
Okay. Are there other abductees in your family or contactees in your family?
Well, my uncle, who's passed on, was the... He and General Arthur Exon were the sources for the book Majestic. It's another example of a fiction that I could, because I couldn't prove any of it. I had no documentation, but they told me the whole story of Roswell in great detail. Art Exon started out by saying, Whitley, you have to understand, within 24 hours of our finding this thing, everybody from Truman on down knew it was not of this world. They explained the reason for the secrecy. The initial reason was that we had the 509th bomb wing in Roswell, and this was an excursion by an unknown aircraft that had crashed within 30 miles of that site, and the possibility that it might be Russian was very much in everyone's minds. And the problem was the 509th was what Stalin was afraid of, and he had 4.5 million troops spread across Central Europe at that time, and he could have moved those troops to the English Channel in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, his fear was he would be attacked with atomic bombs. Our secret was the 509th in 1947 looked operational, and we had spread the belief that we had 8 atomic weapons. We had none, and we would not have any until at the earliest 1950. So we were really the whole free world depended on that bomb wing not being Stalin not discovering that there were no real atomic bombs there. So that was the first reason for the secrecy. The second reason for the secrecy was that the Air Force felt like they had flubbed it, that there had been an attempt at contact from another world and they'd messed it up. And so Truman decided, we'll just let this thing ride for a while. The visitors on their part decided to try to communicate with us, and in 1954, there was a massive attempt to communicate in Washington. We remained silent. If you can imagine people going out into a chimpanzee troop and say, and trying to talk to the chimpanzees and saying, how are you fellows? We'd like to get to know you better. The chimpanzees, of course, entirely ignore them. They have no idea what's going on. That's how the visitors perceived us as reacting in Washington in 1954 in July.
Yes.
So then they began this whole process of building a communications system within the human species that would be able to use our own good minds to rise into this new level of being that would enable us to relate to them. That's what the abductees are about. That's what the implants support. That's what it's all about. Now, they're not saints, don't get me wrong. And they are also very free. And there are those that come here that don't come here with the best intentions. They get off on us in very, very weird and disturbing ways. They are a big, complicated, bizarre reality that we're just going to have to get used to, but they do want us. They want us in the world, and they want to relate to us because I think they find us fascinating.
Did you ever feel yourself as if you are a prey and they are the hunters?
Oh, absolutely.
Are they hunting here?
At a time when I went down to the woods and I couldn't proceed, afterwards I wondered, were those cries the cries of a disappointed predator or a disappointed lover, or both?
Yes. Yes.
It seems like almost it could be both, right, Whitley?
Oh, absolutely. It definitely. I think that the lamb lies down with the lion as long as the lion's not hungry.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
This interview means a lot for me, Whitley, because the first time when I read your book, The Hunger, it was 15 years ago, and I was very much influenced by your novel, The Hunger. And later you wrote other vampire books, other vampire novels. Now I can see, this is my personal opinion, of course, I can feel or sense a kind of connection between vampires and the visitors. Because
very definitely, and also between the Wolfen and the visitors. And
yes, Wolfen also.
The first book, The Wolfen, it's about highly intelligent gray predators with large, extraordinary eyes that are called the Wolfen.
Yes.
And the second book is about another type of much more subtle and charming and predator who is tall and blonde and very ageless.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? I mean, well, I think that I was involved with them all my life.
Yes.
And I just didn't know it consciously, and they were the wellspring of my creativity.
All your life, yes, this is what I feel. Imagine that vampires and visitors come in the nighttime. They are the creatures of the night. And vampires,
yes,
they are the creatures of the night. Yes.
Yeah, they are the creatures of the night. They don't come during the day. The wolves do. They can come in the day, but the greys don't. They come at night.
Yes. And vampires need human blood for their life. And greys or the extraterrestrial visitors need human sperm and egg for their own something. We don't know what. So,
well, they take it, certainly.
Yes, they take it.
They took it from me that first night. I discovered about a year now ago what actually happened. If you look at the hypnosis transcripts of that first night, I get an erection, and I'm saying, you know, where did that come from? I'm literally saying that I'm getting an erection, and I don't know why, and I don't have any sex feelings at all. I later discovered that there is a device called an ele- and there's been enormous numbers of jokes made about the rectal probe, which is about, so far, our culture, that is really what's penetrated our culture, is the face of the gray alien and the rectal probe joke. And that's as far as we've come. We're not doing too well, but then again, we always kind of come at things ass backwards, and in this case, I mean perhaps that literally. In any case, this thing was put into me, and I later discovered that it's called an electrostimulator, that in those days they were used in clinics for people who had men who couldn't get erections. This was put into them, and it stimulates the nerve electrically that controls erections, and it makes the penis go erect. And they use it in animal husbandry routinely to get the bulls and the horses and things rolling when they need to get sperm from them.
Mm-hmm.
Living in the woods behind our house, the neighborhood, the people in the area, some of them knew things. Like our next-door neighbors saw a lot of lights over the house often, and word spread in the community that there was really something going on there. And then communion came out, and given the other things that those people in that area knew, there were a lot of people, I made this stone circle where I was first abducted from, and I used to go there and meditate, and I had to be careful at night because I would sit and shit if I wasn't careful, because people would defecate in it. And they were hostile to me. They were very scared and very hostile. And so I would have to somehow deal with that, and this little man showed up and began living in the woods behind us. I at first thought he was a child when I first saw him, but we came to realize that he wasn't a child. He had the affect of the grave. He was very testy, he was very quick, he was extremely skilled with his hands, he was very nervous, he used to smoke all the time, and he would hang out there, and if Ann and I ever went skinny dipping in our pool, which we liked to do because it was very private, he would run back and forth in the woods behind the trees breaking sticks and gasping in order to, because it embarrassed him terribly for us to go outside like that. And he was, I think, a hybrid. I think he was part human and part gray. I think that that's part of what they're doing, is to create in varying degrees some kind of hybridization in an effort to build this breed.
So do you think that there are many hybrid people around us in the world right now? A new creation?
I don't often encounter people I think are hybrids. I have encountered one, a young woman in Mexico who I am pretty sure her mother believes that she is the result of one of these sexual relationships, and that she was supposed to go with them and didn't and ended up with us. And she's a lovely, brilliant, and extremely fragile young woman with very big eyes. And she's really extraordinary. Beautiful, beautiful person. Extremely secretive, her family is. And I can understand why, and so I respect that.
Did you write about her in your new book, Grace?
No, I don't write about her at all.
So, okay. Okay.
At the request of her family, it was a privilege even to meet her.
I see. And you were visited by another mysterious man when you were staying in Toronto, in Canada. He came one night and he spoke with you. And do you think that was he a hybrid or was he a man in black?
He was, I'll describe him and you can make your own decision, conclusions. He was about 5'7", maybe. He was not a big man. In other words, he was noticeably compact individual. He was gray, very white hair, very kindly face with a rather sharp sort of nose. I thought he was a waiter from a hotel. I mean, that's how he initially impressed me. And I never had the impression there was anything unusual about him in terms of his humanity. It was just that what he said, what I transcribed in that book, The Key,
yes.
I think it was one of the most remarkable conversations, certainly the most remarkable conversation I've ever had. And I think that the man was in possession of the secrets of the ages, whoever he was.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And do you consider yourself as a psychic?
I don't want to be a psychic, but I am one. And I also have a lot of contact with the dead, and I just do. I have to accept that.
Yeah. Whitley, when you talk about contact with the dead, some sort of vibes or thoughts, or is there actual conversations? Or?
No, there can be conversations. It can even be physical at times, very much.
So someone that you know that has passed away suddenly is there.
And when they appear physically, I never realize they're dead until after they've gone. And then suddenly it hits me, oh, my God, of course, how can that be? He's dead. Like I had a dear friend who appeared at a party at about 6 months after he died, and he was at the party. And I said to my wife, let's go over and talk to Oliver. And she said, yeah, but he's dead. And he looked at us so disappointed, and then just disappeared.
So you were the only one seeing him at the time?
Yeah, apparently. And that happens to me a lot.
Uh-huh.
I get that a lot. And
Do you get a clue about what happens? I didn't mean to interrupt you, Farah.
Not really. I just sort of roll with it. I've learned everything bizarre that can happen to somebody, sort of psychic and edge stuff, happens to me, including journeys into the past, the future, and other planets. I am completely unstuck in space-time, and I just roll with it. You know, I used to just be frantic about it, and what's real and what's not, and having all these questions. And the hell with all of that. I can't answer the questions, so I just roll with it. It's the way I am, the way I live.
Do you still work with tarot cards, with tarot?
No, I never really did that. I had that lay of the tarot cards called The Path, which I published a little book about that was on my website for a while. But I never used them as a conjuring thing. I just never did that. That doesn't interest me, although I think it's possible, and I think that they work probably the same way the I Ching works, but it's not something I was ever interested in. I'm a here and now kind of guy. The future will figure itself out when it comes.
But there are, we can use tarot cards in, for other purposes, not only to predict the future.
Well, that's true, and in a sense, the path was one lay of the tarot cards that is, it enables us to kind of see where we are on the path of life, and where we stand, and what our ground is. So yeah, in that sense I use them, but I don't like take out my pack of tarot cards and fool around with them at all.
So, which tarot card represents you in the deck?
The path was shown to me in the Marseille Tarot, and that's the only one I've ever had anything to do with. I have to be honest with you, it doesn't interest me very much. The path was very interesting, but the rest of the stuff and all the special decks and things, I don't relate to that.
Okay.
I agree with you, Whitley, however, Farah is quite the tarot reader.
Well, as I say, it's not my thing.
Okay, so what is your approach to New Age? And there are Crystal Child, Crystal Children, Indigo Children, Star Children discussions. So what is this?
I think a lot of it is wishful thinking and imagination, and a lot of it is a response to the fact that this species is in contact and is struggling to find its way with this, and is struggling to find a spiritual connection that will work and be effective and bring us into the joy that we sense is there, and not lead us into the darkness that we also sense is there. I think that's what the New Age is really about.
And again, if I'm not wrong, you had, or you still have, two very strong feelings for your visitors: love and fear.
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
At the same time, you love them and they scare you. You have fear. So, how do you deal with these two strong feelings against them or towards them?
Well, I think if I had a pet tiger, I feel pretty much toward the pet tiger the way I feel toward the grapes. I don't think you should reconcile the two feelings. They're both together, and in the Greys, in the book, it's very ambiguous as to whether or not they're going to be dangerous. I think we have to decide what they're going to be to us, and that they present themselves in this ambiguous way so that we will make this decision on our own. That one thing that is very, very clear, they're not involved politically at all. There's one thing that happened in the whole time I was with the Greys that they reacted to. And
you mean one political thing?
I'll tell you what that is, but the reason they're not involved, the reason they hold back, and the reason they present this ambiguous appearance to us is they want, and the reason they're so secretive about themselves, is they want us to come freely into ourselves and into the cosmos, not as supplicants, and not as believers, but simply as ourselves, as we really are. And they are extremely, profoundly free. The idea that they're a hive mind and so forth is just a fantasy. When you read the Greys, you will see how they work in triads, and you will see how free those triads actually are, and how very different they are from us, because each one of us is a completely self-contained triad. But the political thing was this. The first Gulf War they reacted to with utter and complete contempt. And I was fascinated by this because I thought to myself, well, and I thought to them, why? I mean, the guy did something terrible. He attacked this other country and he's stealing all of our oil. And I got the impression that there was a letter involved. And about a year later, I came across the information that the United States ambassador to Saddam Hussein...
You're talking about April Glass.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
...sent that letter to Saddam that seemed to endorse an invasion of Kuwait.
Right, and we've discussed that many times. And that's interesting.
You see, they saw where this would lead.
The time is about up here. Whitley and Farah. Farah, you have any closing comments or questions?
Yes, one more thing. Our contact, our interactions with grace or visitors mean a lot to me. And as far as I can see, they make us happy and they make us unhappy, just like the life itself. Life makes us happy and unhappy at the same time. So they are not very different than the life itself. Thank you very much, Whitley. Thank you very much, Jerry. It was nice to talk to both of you.
It is. Whitley, you got any closing comments? Anything? I know the book is doing well.
Well, the book is not out yet. It'll be published in...
Well, I meant by public relations, it's doing well.
Yeah, it is. It's getting good early reviews.
And I imagine one worries about that. You can sometimes hit a peak before you're ready. But at the same time...
But I hope everybody buys it, because if they do, it's an expression of the fact that we may be able to go on with this. And if it sits on the shelves, it's going to mean a lot to the Grays. And we may have to...
In other words, you're answering my final question already, and I haven't asked it, and that is, how do the Grays feel about the book, The Grays?
Very well aware of the book in every detail. The Grays and the book are... This book, more than any book I've ever written about the Grays, is very much with them. They were very present in the process. And as I say, if it's embraced, then a communication has succeeded. If it's not embraced, it's failed.
Well, actually, it would probably be to the benefit of everyone that if this were made into a movie. Books get wide circulation, but certainly don't compare to movies.
That's why the movie is being done. And if we succeed with it, and there are forces that are against it, there's lots of people... you'd talk to MUFON and they'd like the Grays to just go away. And this would like this extraordinary chance to be abandoned. It's abandoned. And I hope it won't be.
We're almost out of time, but what do you attribute this type of thinking to? And there's a lot of it around, as you say.
Fear.
Good answer.
It's all fear. I mean, yes, they're a mixed bag, but God, so are we.
No one would argue with that statement, Whitley.
A few years ago, you could have had communists, Nazis, Democrats, Republicans, all going to other planets, and it would still be just as crazy with Muslims and Christians and everybody. If we were as free to go to other worlds as they are, wherever they come from, we would be meeting the people on those worlds would be meeting something that is just as complicated as the Grays, and just as equivocal, just as wonderful, and just as dangerous, and that would be us.
I think that's a good way to close the show. Farah, I've enjoyed it, and Whitley, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Jerry, and Farah. It was an enormous pleasure and a joy. Thank you.
Whitley Strieber was our icon for this week's show, an interesting fellow for sure. When we come back, Larry Dickham will join us, Farah Yudoza, and myself, as we go around the table discussing Whitley Strieber's work over the years, his UFO experiences, and his new book, The Grays, coming out August 22nd.
Jim Mars, author of Alien Agenda, the world's top-selling nonfiction book on UFOs. I'm here today to tell you one of the most fascinating stories I've come across in my career as a journalist. The secret of Reggae is that so many people in one small American community now know that there is so much more to the universe than what we see and experience in our everyday world.
Save $5 this month when you purchase The Secret of Redgate DVD from ShopJerryPippin.com. This film won the prestigious People's Choice Awards at the 2004 UFO Conference. The Secret of Redgate will astound you. You will want to see it again and again. Save $5. Order it now, this month only, at ShopJerryPippin.com. Secret of Red Gate, a Linda Cowan production. Welcome back to Meet the Icon. We just finished talking with Whitley Strieber, noted author, radio program host, and experiencer. Larry Dickens has now joined us as we do a closing discussion about our interview with Whitley. Welcome to the show again, Larry. You were away during most of the interview. I wish you'd been here. I know you would have had some good questions for him. But you did get to hear some of the interviews, so we invited you to come back and get your opinion as well as Farah's. And we'll get to you in a moment, Larry. But first of all, Farah, you asked Whitley some pretty interesting questions there, kid. I thought it was very candid, didn't you?
I really enjoyed this interview. Everything was very nice, and I really had many questions to ask him. I don't think that I asked all the questions that I had in my mind because of the time limitations, but I feel privileged because of this interview. I'm very happy about it.
Now, as far as Whitley Strieber himself is concerned, Larry Dickin, he's really one of the more successful UFO writers. And in the interview, he said he wrote The Grays as fiction. He told Farah, to a direct question, I am paraphrasing here, but basically he said because that was an easier way to tell a very complex story.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I absolutely agree. Taking any real event and fictionalizing it, in popularizing it, making it understandable to people, I think if you're going, especially if you're going to make a movie, is that's the way to go. Don't go with a strictly down to earth factual treatment of the thing, because it'll be boring. You got to give it some life, and don't be surprised that you're going to see. In Whitley's movie, you're going to see some romance. I know the movies that he's done have been associated with in the past, that has been the case.
Farah, I thought you asked some pretty interesting and intimate questions there about this romance with this gray alien, female type.
Yes, of course. I mean, it is very obvious in Whitley Strieber books.
I've only heard of one other story in all of the decades I've been doing UFO shows, where there was a romantic, an intimate meeting,
well,
an encounter.
Well, it happens not only with the Strieber, the other abductees or contactees that I met in the years in the United States and in my own native country in Turkey, they really experienced this romantic, very intense, sometimes love relationship, and they get attached, and they feel this bond, they have this bond during all their lives, and I'm not surprised because I saw this in many cases. And the nice thing is that Whitley Strieber is very open and very honest to share his own feelings with us, because this is really very intimate.
And Larry, you and I have talked about this many times off the air, very seldom on the air, but it seems to me that there are probably more encounters with extraterrestrials and human beings on an emotional level than we know.
Well, I think that's true. I don't think that other extraterrestrial beings are going to be visiting this planet, strictly to use and abuse. I think, certainly there are cases reported where it seems like all that's happening is use and abuse. But this primarily comes from these little, very small grays, the ones that are like 3 feet tall, which appear actually to be some form of biological entity that is artificially produced and cloned. And it's an equivalent to, conceptually, to what humans think of as androids or automatons that have intelligence and, you know, can act on their own, but they don't really have what we would call a soul or a spirit. However, there are, in many encounters between humans and ETs, there are other beings present. And these beings do show emotion, they do show feeling, and that is the interaction that often occurs.
You know, we can go through our interview, our gallery of interviews, especially with the experiencers, and there are cases where that's hinted at, but most mm-hmm. people don't really talk too much about it. Farrah, you're
well,
right
it,
about
it,
that.
And the thing is what Farrah said is true. It's a very personal, intimate affair, if you want to call it that, between two intelligent species, members of. And, you know, it's like two people getting together. Is you don't necessarily want to share your total private life with people.
Well, this is the first of a series of shows we'll do called Meet the Icon. It had to be special people that are in the media, and hopefully we'll have both of you back on another show about this soon. Farrah, you need to keep in mind that when you get the interview, you're definitely going to be part of the show. Thank you very much for all the work you
Thanks
do.
Thanks a lot.
You
Thank
do
you
so
very much.
Well.
Thanks to you. Thanks to Larry. It was a great experience for
now,
me.
Now, do you have any closing thoughts or comments after this interview? You have anything that really jumped out at you?
Oh, well, you know what? This interview was very inspiring. So I just started to think about who will be our next guest for our interview.
yes. Larry, you... have always been a big help with us and do lots of research, and we usually talk about scientific things, but I know you're interested in some of the things that Whitley talked about, the emotional bonds.
Right. Well, as you know, we've had discussions on offline, is that I'm personally into a lot of spirituality, and I think that is what comes through with Whitley as well. Having read his books, I can assure you that message is there. And the congruence currently of the perception of us humans that spirituality and science aren't necessarily divorced, that they can intertwine and interact. They are in fact one and the same. And I think again, that comes through from Whitley's writings.
We'd like to thank Whitley Strieber again. The name of the book is The Grays, and it is a great read. And in addition to that, looks like it's going to be a great movie. Farrah Yedoza and Larry Dickin, thank you very much.
Okay,
thank
Jerry.
You. Thank you.
Have
nice
a good day.
This
Bye-bye.
Program has been produced and directed by Jerry Pippin Productions. And the whole crew. It was a little joint effort. Until next time, on behalf of Farrah and Larry, thank you for listening. Cheers.
Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes